everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 231. This is the Archaic Edition here at the Caffeination. We have a great show lined up for you today. Wall-to-wall content, literally from one end of the episode to the other. You have story after story. I found so much information today. I found so many cool little bits of news that had to get pushed forth that we're just going to try and fit it all in. There's no cutting, there's no culling, there's no skimming the cream from the top here, because everything is the cream of the crop with the Caffeination podcast. Yeah, we're trying to make sure that everything's all up and right and recording correctly again today. We got a backup system which may or may not actually work today, so we'll see, and we'll talk about it a little bit later on. This is the Archaic Edition because we have a lot of content about the history of technology and stuff like that on today's show. You're going to hear about any and all of the following topics: Audacity, backing up, Babbage, the deference engine, spying, the Earth as a flat object, Xerox, the Navy, Legos, Mario Kart, and lobster claw games. It's a whole bunch of really strange stuff, and I gotta tell you, Real News Bites, Tech Cruft, Caffeine and Food Section, all of them are absolutely chock full, so we're not gonna waste any more of your valuable time. And speaking of wasting time, you know what? When you're meeting with colleagues or clients in person, you end up spending a fortune on gas, and you waste all of your time in traffic and airports and hotels. All that waste for just a two-hour meeting. This problem will not trouble you any longer. Just do more and travel less. Hold a meeting online from your computer with GoToMeeting. Everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com during your conference call and sees your computer desktop on their monitors. Get more done in less time without the hassle of driving or flying. Try GoToMeeting free right now for 30 days. With this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts for your free trial today. We'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all kinds of fun, crazy, cool stuff. It's been a great week, a really busy week, a lot of stuff going on, so we want to really get down to the brass tacks of today's episode. But before we do that, we gotta just do a couple little mentions of where you can find the content from today's show. Just in case somebody gifted you this episode, you're hearing it on the stream over at the Tech Podcast Network or anywhere else that has the fortune of playing this show, then you can find it lovingly nestled at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com, coincidentally enough. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network, and we are a proud Puzzle Piece production. We got a whole bunch of stuff lined up, so we're just going to jump right on into it today. All right, first up in the Real News Bites section today, we have a little bit of an issue that happened on the last episode. I named the last episode Sabotage for a very good reason. I felt like my health had been sabotaged by some tiny little bug that was floating around our house. Everybody in our house at one point in time or another over the past 2 weeks has been bitten by this bug, and we have a feeling that it's kind of recurring, and even though the house has been opened up, we've cleaned it from top to bottom. But as it turns out, it was kind of a portent of bad things to come. The entire episode, which on my Mac, as I record this episode here, has never crashed up until last time, so it took me over an hour to get the episode back. That's frustrating, to say the least. So, you know, the episode sabotaged itself. It decided to teach me a little bit of a lesson with backing up. So I wanted to do a little deed and kind of turn it around, turn a bad into a good, you know, turn it into a positive, make lemonade, so to speak. So I wrote a little article called Audacity Crashed, Now What? The program that I use to record this episode and all the other podcasting that I do, both for work and everywhere else, is called Audacity. It's free. You can get it from SourceForge. There's a whole bunch of other really great and cool utilities, but that's not what I came to talk to you today about. I came to talk to you about what happens when the program crashes, because it's not a full-featured program in certain aspects. It doesn't have a really robust backup situation going on, so you run the risk of losing data, and that's never a good thing. So I got a couple things. I have a couple suggestions in how you go about actually recovering all that wonderful information from your computer, because it is stored there. Unless you were talking for 15 minutes after the program crashed, then really nobody can help you unless the dog can type. But, you know, I think it's a rather full-featured article. I'm kind of putting it out there to the masses. I hope that you enjoy it. It's over at caffeination.com, and I really hope that, you know, if you're familiar with Audacity, please do me a favor, give it a run through, give it a read through. Tell me if I missed anything. I decided to kind of make it bi-platform like everything else I try and do. So it talks about the PC, it talks about the Mac, it talks about how you can take care of both and get the temporary files back, and what utilities I used and the different little tips and tricks that I used to get the episode back up and running for episode 230. This, of course, being 231, we got more content to talk about, so I'm going to just keep going right along. All right, up first for the real, real News Bites, exclusive video over at Wired.com. Now, if you are at all familiar with the history of computing, you know that an abacus was the first basic computing device, and that there were a bunch of different computers, you know, ENIAC being the first actual digital computer, and, you know, built in the 1940s and everything like that, University of Pennsylvania, go PA, but, you know, there's a whole long and sordid history of different inventions and things like that, people claiming to have created the first calculating machine, and there's a rather very famous one by an inventor by the name of Charles Babbage, who created something called the deference engine. Basically, he postulated that this machine would be able to calculate something out to 31 decimal places. He had all kinds of intricate drawings. Unfortunately, he never was able to create it. So, a independent investor has finally come forward, and believe it or not, this is the first time in history. This thing was designed in 1849. This is the first time anything has ever been built. Complete two spec from one end to the other. It weighs 5 tons, literally. One of the older people at Microsoft, I can't remember the man's name off the top of my head, has actually gifted the money to the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California. So if you're out in California, you owe it to yourself to look at this thing. It is gorgeous. It works. That's the impressive part. I mean, this is steampunk before steampunk was steampunk, you know? It's 5 tons. It's brass. It's steel. It's cast iron. And it is meticulously crafted. You have to see the video that Wired put up there. Apparently they were given exclusive access. You can watch it in all of its glory, and it's used to basically create math tables for books and stuff like that. That's the idea. It actually had a printing mechanism on it so that it had dual purpose of printing. Like, it would actually imprint the numbers onto paper and at the same point in time imprint them into a soft clay substance so that it actually made a blank for printing later books. So it actually made pages of a book. So this is more full-featured than ENIAC was. ENIAC just, you know, spit out information. This thing had, like, dual-purpose printing. This is like having two printers running at the same time. And this is with incredibly, you know, precise and mechanical text, or mechanical devices. So it's really cool. I'm in awe of the exactitude. And if you've ever heard me talk with somewhat reverence about clockworks and stuff like this, this goes beyond this. So this is only going to be on display for a year at the Computer History Museum. Then it's going to move into the man's private collection. So it's unbelievable to actually look at this, and it's just really cool. So I just wanted to kind of pass it along. Hopefully you enjoy that. And in the same kind of vein, there was a recent article on the first digital camera built by Kodak, and I just had to pass this along as well. Basically, the first digital camera took a picture and it recorded it on 120 lines of black and white onto a cassette cartridge. One picture took 23 seconds to make. Sorry, it's 100 lines of crude black and white image onto a cassette tape. And so 23 seconds rather to get one small image. I doubt it was even, you know, a pixel. I don't even think they imagined the idea of a megapixel at that point in time. So I'm looking at this thing. It looks more like a projector than a camera, and it's just stunning to think that this thing eventually was reduced to fitting inside of a phone. I mean, let alone the fact that a phone, you know, is now portable, is now, you know, needs no cord, it needs no base station or anything like that. The cell phone itself is a revolution in kind of reliving history when you really look at it and compare it to the cell phones you see on stuff like Saved by the Bell, where they're carrying around the big clunky ones, and they were the height of technology. I mean, imagine before there were cell phones, and I know there's some people listening who do understand that, and I remember before there were cell phones, but not like, I didn't conduct business back then, you know what I mean? So it's a completely different world, and it's really awesome to see the level of adaptation that electronics and computers and technology in general has undergone since then. So, I mean, on the one hand, you have 1849, the deference engine. On the other hand, we have Kodak's first digital camera in 1975. It's just really crazy. And then where's the future going to take us? Well, there's an awesome article over at device.com where where they're talking about the next game controller. I mean, everybody talks about the benefits of the Xbox 360 controller and whether or not it's naturally contoured to your hands versus the PlayStation DualShock 3 or the 6-axis or the Wiimote or any of the other different sensors and input devices that are currently available for video gaming. And they're like, okay, well, what's going to be the next great thing? How are people going to be controlling video games in the future? And there's a couple different stories that are coming out recently. The one that kind of that I didn't talk about here, but really kind of making a difference, is actually Wiimote head tracking. So this gentleman by the, I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but he works at MIT, and basically, as you move your head, the screen reacts. As you move your entire body, the screen reacts. So if you were like looking at a window, when you move to the left, you would see more of the view to the right. If you move to the right, you'd see more of the view to the left. If you got closer, you'd see more of the view in general. And it's really interesting, and that's one level of interaction that you can have with a video game now. But we're looking towards the future. And how about controlling everything with your eyes? So that's correct. There's actually an idea being put on the table at a university in Britain, where they're talking about actually using eye tracking, actually using the reflection off the retina in your eyes as they move around to control movements and characters and pointers and everything on the screen to within a 5 millimeter margin of error. So that's less than the thickness of a standard paperclip. So that's, I mean, like, just talking about the metal of it, not even talking about the width. It's insane. That's a little thick. But, is it 5 millimeters or 0.5? That's a big difference there, but I think they're talking about 5 millimeters. So it's actually the width of the folded paperclip. But, it's just insane to think of where we've been and where we can go from here. And it's really cool to see the different things. And there's a video of this that's kind of all right up there at device. It's just kind of boring to sit there and watch the guy look at the screen and move things around, but it, until you kind of like extrapolate that onto what else it could mean. This could mean, like, you know, a new level of freedom for all the people who are out there who, you know, have lost the use of one hand or both hands or any of the other different things out there. So I just thought it was really cool. And then just kind of like as a little bit of a blowback, a little bit of a looking back into history, one of the first video games, or one of the first 3D shooters that I ever remember playing, actually celebrated an anniversary recently. Yes, on May 5th, 1992, Wolfenstein 3D came out and ushered in two distinct different genres at the same point in time. One, they ushered in the 3D shooter genre, in which you walk around a maze and different things react to your presence and you have to shoot them and kill them. It spawned Doom, and, you know, all the other different ones that usually get a lot more of the credit, you know. But it's really kind of cool to see. And it was even banned in Germany because it portrayed Nazis as the enemies. And any portrayal was actually banned, which is interesting to say the least. But it also kind of ushered in the advent of shareware. The idea that they gave away the first level or the first couple levels, I can't even remember off the top of my head at this point, but they gave away the first couple levels free, and then it was up to you to pay id Software if you really liked the game, and almost everybody did, to get the next couple levels. And it opened up the world to a little bit of a modding community. There were secret doors. It was just a really interesting and rather well-created game, and I still enjoyed playing it. I have very fond memories of it. So, you know, apparently there's a Flash or a Wolfen Flash 3D out there, so if you can find that, you might want to give that a shot. All the links, again, are up at caffeination.com if you'd like to check out this stuff. It's really cool. Another thing that they're talking about, you know, if we're talking about history and then we're talking about ancient history, how about absolutely prehistoric in the absolute sense of the word? I'm talking about before there was history, not even before there was recorded history. How about before there was geologic history? We're talking like planetary history. How would you like to think the Earth may at one point in time have had multiple moons? Yeah, apparently there's a research center in NASA that is currently working on the possibility that a Mars-shaped or Mars-sized planet collided with Earth, creating our current moon, and then it created hundreds of other smaller Trojan satellites, as they call them, that orbited the planet for up to 100 million years. Some of them may have been up to a billion years after the Mars-shaped planet. I mean, I had never even thought about the fact of how the moon might have been created at one point in time or another, but it's really cool to see this, and there's a whole bunch of really thick science in this, and it's really cool to think about it, and to think about some of the previous work that's been done in archaeology based on the current positions of stars and the things that we know about them. And they're saying that these tiny Trojan satellites, as they were orbiting the planet, would have actually been visible as bright stars. They would have actually been visible as bright stars for a certain period of time before they either were lost by the gravitational pull of the Earth and flew off into space as something else, probably like asteroid matter or something like that, or they crashed to Earth. So if this is the case and there were actually large portions of these things flying around, could you imagine what that would do to some of the calculations that people have made? Because, you know, if you have people charting the skies and some of those stars aren't there anymore, it's just kind of cool to think about it. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there again. It's in the same little vein here. And last but certainly not least in the real news bite section, just in case you haven't heard, because I know we're a little bit late to the party here, Nine Inch Nails has actually released a new PodSafe Everything Safe album, which we're going to be playing a track from on the next episode. It's called The Slip. You can head on over to theslip.nin.com to get your free copy. It's being given away. You can head on over there to check out all the other stuff. There's no catch. They're going to eventually be selling a physical copy of it. It's all in Trent Reznor's new venture into free music. It's really kind of interesting to see. He made a ton of money off the initial Ghosts 1 through 4 offering, which is really cool. It's really neat to see that this kind of thing. And this is not an instrumental track. This is, I think it was like 14 or 15 tracks. I already downloaded it, and I don't have it on the hard drive at home right now. I had it on the external that I have in work. But it's really pretty good. It's the same as any of the other releases that you would get out there. I mean, some of them are really rocking. You can nice and crank them. Others are a little bit long and drawn out and slower, but it's all in all, it's really kind of cool. So it's going to be neat to be able to play that, to be able to put that out there. And he specifically said, you know, you can do whatever you want with this. You can mix it, you can cut it, you can mash it, you can put it on a podcast, you can do it all that other stuff. So hey, that's all I really need to do. I'm going to be putting it on the next show, I guarantee you for that. So hopefully you'll be able to enjoy that. Alright, that about wraps up the Real News Bites section here at the Caffeination Podcast. We do have a decent amount of tech cruft and a little bit of caffeine and food, actually a lot of bit rather of caffeine and foods before we head you on your way. Hopefully you're enjoying this fast and furious kind of show here. I'm trying to slow it down a little bit at the same time, trying to pick it up, you know. Just in case you are, in fact, listening to this on a stream somewhere and you wonder what show are you actually listening to, this is the Caffeination Podcast, and we are located at www.caffeination.com, CaffeinationCom. And this is the Tech Cruft section, where we find all the different little bits of detritus that float around the internet, all the different tiny little bits of fun that people post out there, and we're just trying to, you know, spread the love, and hopefully everybody will kind of enjoy them. First little thing we have up here is an article from Gizmag. Apparently, the paperless society, the paperless office, has never really materialized. People print email, people print things for the stupidest reason, and, you know, there's always that one extra sheet of paper that prints out after you're printing a web page or something else like that. So Xerox is trying to actually, you know, fix this. Well, the first thing they can fix, I'll tell you right now, before they actually go into their new thing, is you're not supposed to put paper that's been through a laser printer back through the laser printer. So if you manage to print a blank piece of paper, you're not supposed to put it back through, because since it's already been through the fuser, the really hot part inside the laser printer, it actually slightly curls the paper one way. So if you don't feed it in the right way, or even if you do, it has more of a tendency to jam, something like a 40% more tendency to jam than if you don't feed it back through. So if they could fix that error, maybe make the fuser a little bit cooler or something like that, or actually flatten the paper out while it's being fused, I think that would go a little bit further to helping the whole environment thing. But apparently Xerox has decided to, they've come up with something at the Xerox Research Center in which they've actually created an ink which over the course of 24 hours disappears. This is perfect for government memos and stuff like that. I wonder if you could still hold it over the flame like you can with the lemon juice and actually view it. I mean, that'd be kind of cool. But I like the idea of reusable paper. But at the same point in time, you know, you just know something goofy's going to happen, like somebody's going to print a contract on this. It needs to be clearly identifiable as, you know, a recycled paper. There needs to be no way that you can pass this off as normal paper for this to actually work. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting. So, yeah, it would be a neat way to print something out, take it down to your boss or something like that, have him say, oh, yeah, this is perfectly fine. But, you know, you should be able to do all that without printing. But unfortunately, you know, it just doesn't work that way. So we're still in that society that really kind of thrives off the trash and everything else that it creates. So we're trying to get away from that. So I think while it's done with a good heart, and yes, it is a very proprietary system, so Xerox is going to be the only person to have it. They're going to be the only place you can get the ink from it, and you know it's not going to be cheap. So it self-erases after 16 to 24 hours. So it's kind of interesting to see, but we'll see exactly what the technology does after the fact, you know? All right, now, from things that are reusable to things that are just plain smart. How would you like an idea of a way to charge your phone and back up the data at the same point in time? Well, there's a cool new idea coming out, and this one's from over at gizmag.com. This thing is going to be, it's from a company called Longshow Information Technology. It's going to cost around $30. Basically, you plug your phone into this, it charges your phone, and then it also backs up all of the pertinent data on your phone. Absolutely everything. So it also can act as apparently as a portable power supply. So if you're away from the power or something like that, and you need a little bit of extra juice, you know, this thing is an all-in-one kind of device. It's also a media card reader. I mean, it's kind of impressive all this stuff that this does, and it's only $30. So, and it comes in designer colors. It's pink, black, blue, and gray, and none of them are really masculine colors. I mean, even black is kind of a muted black, and even the blue is like a powder blue. But it's kind of really awesome to see the technology head towards this direction, you know? It's really kind of an area that nobody's really taken seriously yet. I know a couple of people who've lost iPhones or stuff like that, and they're just absolutely devastated because of the amount of information they had on there. You know, something like this, that'd be really kind of cool. So the supported brands for this so far include Nokia, Motorola, BlackBerry, Samsung, and Sony Ericsson. The only problem is I have an LG. So it's going to have all your phone numbers, all your contacts, all your calendar stuff, digital photos, and all the other stuff on there. It's going to just download it. I mean, that's awesome. All right. Apparently, there's currently an article, or rather, an auction, or something that you can buy. I don't know if it's an auction specifically, or if it's just a toolkit that's being put out there by Craftsman, which is apparently every tool that they make, almost. 1,400 tools. That's 1,470 piece tool set. The entirety of their line. $8,600. So if you are the handyman, if you're the guy who absolutely has to have everything, you might want to just consider buying this and being done with it. I would hate to have to track all of these tiny little parts, but I do have to tell you that the actual picture they use, the product shot, is impressive because somebody had to lay it all out so that it looks at least somewhat aesthetically pleasing, and it's really kind of neat. I mean, they have sockets of every shape and assortment. They have pliers of every kind, and these aren't cheap tools either. I mean, these are the good Craftsman stuff. They have all kinds of wrenches and torque things and hammers and pliers and tweezers, and I don't even know what else, and it's just all designed very neatly. It's some kind of, it's like some massive domino puzzle just waiting to be toppled. It's really kind of cool. And the only reason I put that up there is because, you know, what do you build with tools but crazy things? And apparently the U.S. Navy has decided to build a better boat. So rather than having the standard shape of a boat, and by the standard shape, I mean if you're looking at it, the actual hull goes down to a little point under the water like a normal boat you would imagine would be. No, this is called a triple-hulled ship. So when you're looking at this ship in dry dock, it actually resembles a cross between a catamaran and a battle star, one of the battle destroyers from Star Wars. It's really kind of impressive, really modern, and, you know, this is the first advancement in naval design, like the overall form factor of navy boats from one end or the other has been rather sedentary. I mean, the actual turret system, the big guns in the battleship, honestly hasn't changed design much from the original monitor, from the original ironclad ship that fought in the Civil War in the United States. I mean, the turrets were simply dropped in, so if the battleship was to flip over, all of the turrets would fall out. I mean, that's how stagnant the genre is. So if you take that and you kind of just throw it into a complete loop, and this is basically, it's a very fast moving warship. Apparently it's supposed to go 60 knots right off the slip. It's USS Independence is the first one that's being built. They're supposed to be relatively inexpensive at $208 million. And the Navy's going to be building 55 of them. So rather than having, it's called a trimaran, so it's a catamaran with three, but they're saying it's new, fast, easy to deploy. You can get close to the shore because it draws less water. It has a lot of surface area floating out. So it's kind of like a cross between an airplane, a catamaran, and something from Star Wars. It's supposed to launch helicopters and all other kinds of crazy cool stuff. So you really, kind of owe it to yourself to head out there and check it out. It's really cool, and they have a lot of real world pictures of this at the same point in time, and it's just I like looking at weapons and stuff like that, like the large scale military stuff, and it's really neat seeing some of the concepts behind it. So just passing that along. All right, and from one end of the spectrum, from the really hardcore military aspect, we go back to the other end and kind of a lighthearted little playful thing. How would you like a really tall tower of Legos? Well, how would you like the world's tallest tower of Legos? Yes, that would be 100 feet tall. Yeah, that's correct. There was a competition in Legoland to create the tallest stack of Legos in the world. So this sucker stretched 100 feet high. I don't know the structural integrity of it. I'm assuming it had to at least stand on its own for some time, but it's really kind of neat to see the actual colors flow, because they didn't, these are all tiny little bricks. It's not like they were using larger sized Legos or anything like that. And it was just built up. I'm pretty sure they probably built it in sections and just kind of fit them all in together. And it's, I think it's just generally like a cross shape, like an X shape that goes straight up, and it eventually, I'm pretty sure, probably tapers so that the weight on the top was less than the weight on the bottom, because most structures, when they're built like this, kind of tend to be smaller up at the top, like a radio tower, than they are at the bottom. So there's a little bit more support, but it's really, it is actually tapered. It's hard to see from the photo, but half a million bricks. So it's just neat. So this was done in celebration of the toy's 50th anniversary. So I don't know why it took so long to actually make it out to the internet for this kind of cool thing. But all right, and the last little thing we have here from the TechCruft section, like I told you, we are going fast and furious. We have a ton of stuff yet to go, but we're just going to take one quick break here to play a little something that my buddy Jimmy sent me. This is a group of guys in Japan have actually created, if you play the water glasses where you tap the glass with a mallet or whatever, it produces a certain tone. Well, mix that with glass bottles instead, so they're a little bit more stable, and then mix that with an RC car, and then mix that with the theme song for the Caffeination and Mario, and you get something that sounds a little bit like this. All right, and it goes on for a little bit longer after that, but the idea behind this is that there's an RC car with a tiny little mallet, and each bottle that this thing is hitting as it drives in a perfectly straight line down a parking garage is creating a singular tone to allow it to continue. It's unbelievable engineering and unbelievable planning at the same point in time, and the spacing is all done to actually create the tune of the Mario Brothers theme song. So it's just kind of cool, so I just decided to to put it out there, and thank you, Jimmy. It's just awesome little clip there. You need to head on over there and check that out for yourself. All right, diving right on in, fast and furious into the caffeine and food section here. How would you like a robot that learns to cook? Well, this one has a slight difference. Basically, the idea behind this robot is that you can show it certain tasks and it can reproduce them. So basically, it has a learning algorithm attached to it so that it can repeat actions. And they have it here slicing ham, mixing eggs, and stuff like that. The idea that they're putting forth in the Engadget article is that, you know, if you can show it, you know, slicing ham, what's to stop somebody from killing somebody or slicing other things and having the robot repeat after that? I think it's about time that we looked seriously into the three laws of robotics. Asimov was not that far off when he said, you know, this is the kind of thing that might need to be looked into. All right, now the next little thing we have up here, again from Engadget, and again in the realm of food, I wonder that, but it is the use of Tesla coils to cook hot dogs. Now, I've seen a bunch of weird things in my life, but apparently at the Maker Faire, they were using giant Tesla coils, giant radiating cones of electricity, giant radiating cones of lightning to actually cook hot dogs. So I just thought it was kind of cool. So they were going to be cooking a dozen hot dogs at one point in time, simultaneously roasted, and they were ready, safe for consumption. So you can head on over there, check out the video, check out the link. The only problem is I didn't get to taste them, so I can't accurately say whether or not I thought they were good or anything, but decided to pass it along nonetheless. All right, next little thing up here is a send-in by a buddy of mine. Redneck burials. Apologies to anybody who considers themselves a redneck or considers that an offensive term, but it's just the title of the article here. A beer can coffin. Apparently one gentleman loves Pabst Blue Ribbon so much that his name is Bill Bramati, by the way, and he lives in Illinois. He loves PBR so much that he decided to create an entire coffin that only weighs 280 pounds. It's red, white, and blue, the same thing. It looks like a giant beer can. You know, I know a couple of people who are probably going to do this for Red Bull cans at the same point in time, but it's just kind of weird, and apparently he has use for it up until he actually intends to use it as his final resting place. He's actually thrown a couple couple parties, used it as a cooler, so I like the dual-use thing. That's kind of fun, and of course, it was filled with ice and PBR. So, moving right along yet again. All right, you've heard of the claw machine. You've heard of this is cruel on one hand, but since I'm not a fan of lobster as a dish in general, I just don't like the taste of it. It's kind of funny on the other. How would you like one of those claw games at a seafood restaurant to where the idea behind it was to actually reach in and grab your dinner? Yep, that's correct. I don't understand how this is working. I don't understand where this thing is, but there's a video of it actually in operation. So the idea is that you're supposed to be able to grab a moving lobster and then drop it, and then I'm assuming you can pull it out and get it cooked, or you can just cull it, have it cooked in the back of the tank. That would even be worse, because then all the other little guys would sit there and watch their buddy, bite it. I actually think it would be a little bit more sporting if you cut the actual rubber bands off the lobster's claws and let them fight the claws that came down. You know, a little battle royale before they met their maker. I like it because it's really humorous, really interesting. There's actually a restaurant in Vegas where they have a giant fish tank on the outside, and they list recipes under the fish tank for the fish that are in it. So this is just a little bit different, a little bit strange. And speaking of strange, how would you like a gadget that controls your coffee grinds, but in a different, stranger way? How would you like it controlled based on your heartbeat? Yeah, Heart Beans is a strange grinder that's some kind of odd shape of a wood. I don't really know exactly what to call this shape, but basically it uses, biometrics, and it actually uses the beating of your heart as a determination for what grind and what kind of bean and what you would like to drink for that day. I don't know. I don't think that this is actually a product that you can buy right off the bat here, and I think it only grinds them and then puts them in the bottom, and everybody looks very, kind of aloof as they're using it, and I don't actually like the form factor of it because it's this strange knotted wood, and I don't really think that that's something that I'm, really enthused about in relations to my coffee, but I like the idea as a generalized concept. I think it's a little weird. But, hey, weird means I get to pass it along to all of you. All right, and then the last little article that we have here is Zero Waste Restaurants. Yes, that's correct. There's a restaurant called Cradle to Cradle, and they've decided to create a zero waste product line. So the idea is that they're creating used coffee grounds, vegetables, herbs, all their other stuff that gets thrown out normally. They've found a way to sterilize it, push it into a form factor, and actually create dinnerware out of it. So if you want to read a little bit more about it, I don't have a lot of information about it, although I do know that used coffee grounds make fantastic fertilizer. Just finished doing that yesterday, but just passing it along as I am wont to do. But yep, that's about it for the Caffeination Podcast here for today. Whew, long and short of it, the entirety, here we go. All right. I'd like to thank you all for listening to today's Caffeination. This has been Caffeination number 231, the Archaic Edition. This is, you know, if you'd like to find this episode, it's located lovingly nestled at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. We're a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. And we're also a proud Puzzle Piece production. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Hope you enjoyed all the content. Hope you enjoyed all the fun, crazy news items that have been flying around. Thanks for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.